you know, I begin with the thought that I'm a very optimistic person for the future of the church. I believe Christ's kingdom will spread throughout the whole earth. Just as the waters cover the sea, so the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth. I'm very optimistic about that. But I'm very pessimistic about now, what we see now in the world. And there are a number of reasons for that. The way the world is going presently, the way the church is going, we have reasons to be very concerned. And what we're looking at today is a vital topic in helping to deal with that situation. And the Lord willing, you will have some instruction, some things to take home with you. So if you have your notes, you can follow along. You can have, if you have a pen, I have a couple of extra ones in case somebody needs a pen. You can make notes, you ask questions. Yeah. We are going up against the odds in society. And the fact is, it is hard for men to grow to Christian maturity because of the problems that we have in society. And you might think, well, I'm out here in Strathroy, I'm out here away from the big cities. But you're not really that far away. And it's coming. Think, if you are old enough, you'll remember in the late 80s, the term gender blender came into being, made popular by Michael Jackson, who thought that one of his greatest desire was to be like Diana Ross, to look like she did, blend the genders. Since then, we've had other people. You've probably heard of people like Elton John, who dresses like a lady, or Boy George. He's on television in Canada right now doing a television program. So the influence is there. And if anyone needs to become a man, it would be Boy George because of the way he dresses and the way he acts. You know, the biggest increase in cosmetic surgery is with men who want to look a particular way, wanting to look young. They obsess with this. They spend so much time in the gym, many people, many men, because they're obsessed with the way they look. And recently in the United States, in Ohio, there was a student in university who was put out of school because he said that there were only two genders. Now, how many genders are there? You ask any children, they're men and they're women. They're boys or they're girls. Well, this young man was put out of school because he said there were only two genders. Even in Canada now, we have birth certificates that say when it comes to gender, you see TBD, to be determined. So that child will determine whether he wants to be a boy or a girl. And that's the social part of the problem. We see that all around, and it's creeping. And you would not think of it immediately as being a problem, but it's going to creep closer and closer to the church. But along with the cross-dressing gender blenders came the cross-duty blenders, ignoring the difference between the responsibilities that we have as men and women. The distinctions between men and women have become blurred. Women are now in active combat. Of course, the problem with that is women now are 5 times more likely than men to have PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. But that's happening now. In fact, I just heard of a pastor whose daughter was enrolled in the military and can be called to active combat duty. In many schools, there are no distinctions anymore with washrooms. You heard of that, really picked up last year and continues now, where a lot of the schools, the washrooms are for anyone. They're for little girls, and then you have some old men going into the same washrooms as little girls. Because we've lost the distinction between men and women. You know, our own prime minister, He hates the term mankind. Remember that from a few weeks ago? He said, you know, it's people kind or some other thing like that. He doesn't like to hear mankind. It should be for everyone. We are all the same, he says. And as a society as a whole, we are removing the distinction between men and women. And if you don't treat people equally, you're looked upon as the moral deviant. You're looked upon as doing something bad if you distinguish that there are differences between men and women. That's how far it has gone. And in fact, you can be accused of discrimination if you distinguish men and women in many cases. That's the political side of things. We want to remove that distinction in the way society itself is run. And then there's a third aspect of this problem. That's what we find in the breakup of the family. You have it in socially, you have it politically, but you also have it in the family level. Think of how many families now have that don't have dads anymore. Think of one particular case in many of the black families, African-American, African-Canadians. What is the struggle within some of those families? Fathers are missing. In 1965, 24% of kids were born out of wedlock in this race. Today, it's 75%. 75. High crimes as a result. Very common thing within the families. Now, there are racial aspects, and in some ways, you have to deal with some of those issues. I'm not touching on the racial issues, but if you are a black man stopped by the police, you're more likely to be stopped by the police, and if you're charged with the same crime as a white, you're more likely to get a longer prison sentence and all that. Those things are facts. I'm not going to deal with that. But what has happened with the lack of the father figure within the home is that the family has fallen apart. The averages, the statistics are that 33% of black men will spend time in prison. 33%. 30% are arrested by the age of 30, by the age of 18. That's the difficulty that we face. And why is that? There's a breakdown in the family. I'll use another example. I have a friend who part of a family of 8 kids. But the father didn't care for his mother, and he was cheating on his wife and broke the marriage, sort of fell apart. And out of those 8 kids, 7 were married. 1 didn't get married. And of the 7 that got married, 7 of them are divorced, and some are on their second and third wives. Why is that? And it's through all the culture, all the races as well. You know, that's incredible that is the kind of things we deal with. Why have we fallen apart so much in what we have in society? The family structure has gone. The family structure has gone. Think of those who are in prison. How many of those people, you do the studies, you will find that very many of those people are there because of the breakup in the home. They didn't have a father. Often the mother is trying to run the home by herself. And she can't. Children need mother and father. And much more, but that's the start. When that is missing, there's a difficulty. So that's the third issue. The family structure is sort of fallen apart in our society. In Canada now, I've heard in addition that a little over 50% of children now are born out of wedlock. In Canada, 50% for the whole population. people don't want to be married anymore. They have different, they make different choices. So we are going up against the odds. But it's not just in the social structure where you have Michael Jackson started this revolution and these cross-dressers. And it's not just where we sort of say everyone's equal and it can do the same thing and there's no issues whatsoever with what a woman can do, what a man can do. And it's not just in the breakup of the family unit outside. This actually is also in the church. And this is why we have the breakdown. This, I think, identifying the problem is far more important. Well, it's very important if you're going to look for the solution. And look at what churches have done. Churches have abdicated biblical headship roles. One congregation I saw about 2 weeks ago, they called two lesbians to be co-pastors of the church. And you say, of course, that's those people. The reality, though, this was an evangelical church, and they quickly started to fall apart. And we see what happens in the church around the nation is the thing that gradually creeps in and takes over with even within our midst. And you might think that's incredible, that will never happen. But if we follow the trend, if we follow the trend of the day, it's not surprising. I mean, we came out from churches that moved away from biblical headship. So we've installed women as pastors and deacons and elders. And we haven't thought about this. Think about, apart from the biblical proof, of course, that these things should not be, one of the fundamental flaws in the people who have done this, in their action, is that women then have authority over their husbands. And now you begin to see where the problem is. These women have authority over their husbands. Let's say a woman is an elder in the church. She automatically is over her husband. I had a lady once who was in Suriname, and they asked her to serve as an elder in a Baptist church that she was attending. And what is it that really got to her was when I said, so now you have authority and you can discipline your husband. How do you feel about that? Is that consistent with the Word of God? Sometimes we don't think through the things properly, but then she became head of her husband. Thankfully, she decided not to take that. And the Lord really blessed her for not doing that. And think about how we've gone about even in congregational the way we treat women in congregations. And many churches, they use the voting system very carefully to prevent a woman, for example, from nullifying her husband's vote. If a man and his wife are voting, she can vote opposite to what he's saying and neutralize his vote. What does that mean? Then he doesn't have authority over her. Now, that's just another one of the examples, but all of these things contribute to an unbalanced family. The family structure goes when the order that God has put in place goes. This corrupts the order that God put in place. But of course, you hear the argument, well, of course, women are brighter than men. Suppose the husband is not so smart and the woman is brighter than her husband, more intelligent. Why should we hold her back? Well, the Chinese have a saying, and it's this. You can't have two tigers in one mountain. Think about that. What would happen if you have two tigers in one mountain? One will probably kill the other one. And there's an order that God has put in place. Right? Suppose I'm going down the road and I'm driving and someone just out of high school goes to police school and gets his becomes a policeman. And he goes in the middle of the road and he says, stop. But I say, well, I'm smarter than you are. I went to seminary. I got degrees. You can't tell me when to stop. What would happen then? Anarchy, confusion, chaos. But God has put this order not because the man is smarter than his wife, I married someone smarter than I am. That shows how smart I am. But there's an order that God has put in place, and that's what helps to keep balance. If everyone is equal, what do you get? Anarchy. If everyone is equal in authority, what do you get? Anarchy. Confusion. Because nobody will know. Nobody can help to maintain order. Everyone will do what is right in his own eyes. And you will see that in a little bit later when we look at the book of Judges, chapter 2. Sometimes, and by the way, here's the problem. When there's anarchy, how will the work of Christ be done? What is it that God gave us to do? Multiply, fill the earth, have dominion over it. When Jesus went back into heaven and restored us into right relationship with him, he said, go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations. How are you going to do that if you're fighting? How are you going to do that if there's no order? That order is important. You see, that's why you have in the military. The biggest thing to train you in the military is that the ranks. You learn to respect and take orders from those who are over you. That's what helps to make the fight effective. So it's much more than just saying, well, we have order for order's sake. It's for a purpose. And that's why this is so important, what we're talking about today. When men are mature and they do what God has called them to do, there's order in the home, there's order in the church, and then there's effective spreading of the gospel in obedience to the great commission that God has given to us. But sometimes people say, well, I don't want to look like a... If we have that kind of order of having male leadership in the home or male leadership in the church, we're going to look like sticks of mud. But we want to fit in with the rest of society. You know, one of the things I've heard a woman say... once she was speaking of a relationship with her husband, she said, but that is my money. And I always scratch my head and think, you know, when you get married, when you say, I do, private ownership disappeared. Everything belongs to both of you. But you have this kind of a distinction now, and you forget the purpose, the way God intended that marriage ought to work. About 10 years ago, I did a wedding. And in the vows, I asked, I thought was supposed to be done, that the lady was to love and obey her husband. And I had one lady who came up to me afterwards. She was furious. She thought, obey? What is this? The 1500s? But it's biblical. That order that God put in place, submitting to your husband, is a biblical command. And yet, and this was in the church. This was a lady who was a member of the church. Not our church. We try to hope that our members think of this in a better way. But a lady, a member of a Christian church, she was upset that that was the order that God had, we had put in place. And we said that you vow to obey your husband because that's what God intended. And then sometimes people just abdicate the responsibility to teach their children altogether. It's another reason for the problems that we have within in the church. Fathers don't teach their children like they should. You know, it's very easy to say, let the elders are doing a good job. Let them do it. We forget the command in the scriptures is for fathers to teach their children. What the pastor does is important. What the elders do is important. But the explicit command starts with the fathers to teach their children. They've abdicated that responsibility. Many have. And this started, of course, this is where this is really important. This started in the 1800s largely because fathers became very busy with the onset of the Industrial Revolution. Fathers were working long hours in the factories and making a living and trying to make ends meet. And then mothers took over the job of teaching their children. And then the mother said, well, I'm teaching them at home. Why can't I teach them in church? And then the church says, well, I guess so. And then the mother's saying, I'm teaching the kids in church. Why can't I serve as an elder in the church? That was really the modern change to women leadership within the church. It was fathers becoming too busy. And we ended up in the situation where we are today. Another thing that has caused this is where people would say the difficulties in order and in the church. I've heard, in fact, I heard this one recently. The father was very enlightened, he said. So he said, I just want my child to decide for himself what he believes. I don't want to force anything down his throat. I don't want to force this catechism thing or reading the Bible. Let the child decide for himself, just like I decide for myself. That sounds very enlightened. But it's not what he's commanded to do. In fact, you will see we are commanded to teach our children. When they're old, they're responsible for what they do with it. But we are commanded to teach. We're not to let our young people grow and do whatever they want. Why? Your children are God's children. God marked them. God owns them. God owns you. And he tells you that you must train those children. Raise them in the fear of the Lord. Teach them diligently. He says, when you lie down, when you get up, when you walk on the road, wherever you go, it's your responsibility to teach them. Not to let them decide for themselves when they're young. It's your job to teach them. On the other hand, there's the other side of things. There are some men who treat their wives like they're an appendage. Sort of like a personal servant. This has also caused problems within the church, within the families. We take the idea that a wife must submit to her husband, and then the husband starts to bring down the hammer to make his wife submit to him. That has not been good for the church either. So submission must be willing. And the man is not called to rule by force. The man must never forget that his wife is a child of God. And that woman was given by God to be a helper, which include being an advisor to him. And to treat her in a disrespectful way as if she is nothing more than a personal servant given by God to him, is not to treat the daughter of the child of God that way. You should never treat the child of God that way. So young men, because of these problems, some of it from outside, but largely from the inside, they're not being raised to be men of God. Because of this, sometimes the men are wimpy. What do I mean by that? They're scared. Scared to challenge their wives and challenge their children, because we're told that there's no distinction, that the rule, if you're trying to tell your wife what to do, that's treating her like nothing, and therefore you're disrespecting her. And the man wants to be accepted by society, so he becomes sort of wimpy. Now you understand why some of those men want to wear dresses and makeup and act like women. They've forgotten what their responsibilities are. On the other hand, there are some men who become more like tyrants, because that's what they see their fathers doing. They treat their wives like personal servants. But that's not what God intended either. You know some wives are scared of their husbands? You know anyone like that? You don't have to answer, but you probably have heard of people. The women talk about their husbands almost with fear and trepidation. And sometimes even their children are afraid, because the way they rule is quite monstrous. The love that should be there isn't there. So you have either the wimpy man or the tyrant. And when this happens, the church becomes weak. The order that God intended isn't there. And if the families aren't good, the church won't be good. And if the church isn't good, remember, then you can't do the work that God has called you to do. This is why this is so important. What happens when the church becomes weak? When the church becomes weak, it is no longer able to confront sin. And in fact, it often compromises. It starts to water down things to say, well, things aren't going well. Maybe people are not coming to church. Young people are growing up, but then they're leaving the church. So how do we get people back into the church? Let's change a few doctrines. Let's water down things. Let's make worship more entertaining. Let's cut the sermon shorter. Let's do some innovations. Then the church no longer can be a prophet to the state. You know, we are given that task of speaking the truth to the state and to all those who are around us. We are supposed to proclaim God's truth. But if we don't do that, then what happens? Then the state gets strong. When the state gets strong, guess what it does? It doesn't say, the state never says, well, we don't want any more power. You ever hear a government say that? They're always, yes, we'll take on more. And when the state becomes more powerful, the state flexes its muscles. The state's one of the first things they like to do is say, let's start some more programs then to meet the needs of the people. I mean, you watch, election time is around the corner. You know we'll be having some more programs, some spending programs. And where do they get the money from other than borrowing it from China? They'll tax the people more. And when they tax the people more, then the people have less money to give to others, to help others. So when there's a need in the church and the people don't have enough money in the church, what's the next thing they do? Go to the state. So what do we make into God instead? The state. And when those young people grow up, that's all they saw was a check was coming from the government. And it multiplies the problem. They think that Premier Wynne and Prime Minister Trudeau, they're the good ones. They send us money. So this problem of a weakness within the church is, we have to deal with this. This is important in order for the church to be strong and do the work that God has really called us to do. There's danger in compromise. So how do we fix the problem? The first part is, we realize that there is a problem there. And the problem is with leadership within the church, because we have either become tyrants or we've become wimpy. That doesn't help. Well, how do we raise young men then to maturity so the church can be strong and do the work that God has called it to do? Well, we must go back to the foundation of mankind. And I don't think Prime Minister Trudeau is listening, but we'll say people kind for him today. We have to go back to when God made man. That's how you understand how you are to raise boys to Christian maturity. This started in the Garden of Eden. You have to know what your duties are if you are going to fulfill them. So, what was the command? Have dominion over the earth under God's direction. That was the call. And when you do that, there will be two things that will happen. It will be good for you, so blessings will come. It will bring glory to God. It's good for man, it brings glory to God. This dominion was the command. And man was to do it in a loving way. And yet, we find a lot of difficulties, because of course Adam sinned. And even before that, Adam himself couldn't do it. I mean, when God made Adam, he said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper that's suitable for him. So God gave Adam a wife to help him to do the work that God had called him to do. And Eve would help Adam in three main ways. Now, I want you to listen carefully to these three ways. And if you're a young man, you should be taking notes right now, because this is what you're going to look for in a wife. One, companionship. It's not good for man to be alone. Man needed help to do the work that God had called him to do, sure, but man needed someone to be there with him. He needed friendship, someone to spend time with. You see, life is much more than work. Do you hear that? I know that might not sound right to some people who just love to work. And I work hard from sunup to sundown. But companionship is something you need. This is what your wife needs as well. The second thing is, God says, I will make a helper that's complementary to him or opposite to him. How would Eve help? And the number one thing that people say is cook and clean and wash. I try to tell my wife that. And it didn't work so well. So. Because it's much more, isn't it? Your wife helps you with advice, counsels, sometimes rebuke. That's part of what God knew that Adam needed. The third thing, they were to have children. So if you're looking for a wife, you want one who will give you companionship, one who would help you in the work, and third, one who wants to have children. Why children? Because they had a lot of work to do, that's for sure. And God wanted them to have more help. Children are helpers. And one of the most frustrating things for parents is when children don't do their chores. I got a lot of smiles over here. But it's true, when children don't help, it upsets the balance in the family. And when the father comes home, the mother says, well, here are some things that I told the kids to do, but they didn't do it. And she's upset. And then the whole family gets upset. Instead of a pleasant evening, they're thinking, well, they didn't play their part as well. You see, in the Bible, child labor is a good thing. Child labor is always a good thing. They help to play their part in the family. So, for those of you who are still single, one of the most important decisions you will make in your life is how you pick a wife. And if a wife, for example, doesn't want children, is selfish and doesn't care about companionship or is not interested in helping, keep on looking. That's not going in the right direction. But here's the thought. I thought about this recently. I said, why did God make Adam, then made him realize? Why didn't he make Adam and Eve right away? Why did he make Adam first? It was certainly to show him how much he needed a wife. God took the time to make him see, hey, this is lonely. Hi, I need some help. I'm the only one. We need more like I am. Therefore, you must not hail singularity as superiority. We live in a time where we think, you often hear that. I had some discussions in Christian Renewal with someone who was boasting about the blessings and the superiority of being single. Well, that's not what God said. He says it's not good for man to be alone. Now, sometimes there are extraordinary circumstances that someone may remain single. And it's not a sin to be single. But if you want to be single because you refuse to do what God says, and you just are in rebellion against him, then it can become sin. It can become sinful. But being single is not a superior spiritual state. It's really a misunderstanding of 1 Corinthians. If you want to ask about that after, please do. So, what are those ways you can help to help your wife to fulfill her duties now, which are so essential for man? And here's the thing. God gave man a wife But for the wife to do her job, there's some things that the man must do for his wife so she can be of help to him. You see, the wife wasn't there simply as your servant. You have obligations to your wife. So what did God say that the man must do? Well, you have to make it easy for your wife to help you. She wasn't simply sent there to be your servant, your cook, your cleaner, your dishwasher. In fact, you are called to make her life easy. No force, no manipulation. Just work to make her life easy. And your duty to her is summed up in two words: love her. That's why if you're selfish, you shouldn't be getting married. You examine your life. Because when you are getting married, it's saying, now it's my job to help my wife so she can help me back and we can do the work that God has called us to do. So how do you love your wife and how should you love your wife? This is an important question, of course, considering how love is used in our culture. You think of the sloppy ways in which we use love. Well, you have to love your wife the way Christ loved the church. Ephesians 5, to the point where you're ready to what? Die for her. He gave himself for her up to that point. Love is defined as seeking the good of the other. And when you think of when you think of love, you have to think of the person, the object of your love, not on what you will get back. And you see, this is where we have this notion of, you ever hear this? Oh, in our marriage, it's 50-50. That's a loser marriage right there. If you ever find one that says 50-50, or maybe they don't understand what that means, but marriage is not 50-50. Marriage is 100%, 100%. You have to fulfill your responsibility. So it's not the negotiated thing. Well, if you do your part, then I will do my part. Rather, it is both fulfilling their duties to each other. Now look at the details. What do we mean then by love in terms of giving up of yourself? First of all, you give preference to your wife's needs. You can follow some of these now in your notes. Giving preference to your wife's needs. Remember, your wife is more important than your children. You realize that? Your wife is more important than your children. She's more important than your friends. Now, that's easier to get. She's more important than your job. That's a little bit tricky because sometimes people really love their jobs and they push aside their wife for their jobs. She's certainly more important than your hobbies or your studies. And remember, love for your wife, love is never hidden. People who say, oh, I love them from a distance, yeah, that's... You might have an emotional attraction, but love is work. Love is, I use the term labor. Love is labor. It's the things you do. You don't say, well, I just really love my wife. It's partly because of how we use this word love these days, right? You had all the chicken wings there. What do you say? I love chicken wings. Well, is it really love? I mean, you enjoy it, tasty, but love is what you do. What did Jesus say? If you love me, you will obey my commands. Love is fulfillment of the law. So if you're sucking some meat off the chicken wings, yeah, that's more love of self than love of chicken wings. So you are ready to sacrifice for her. You give preference to your wife's needs. Second, you're to teach her. God expects that the man must present his wife blameless before him. How do you do that? You wash her with what? How do you make her clean? How do you present her blameless? The word of God, the teaching of the word of God. You know, it's easy to say, well, we go to church every Sunday. And you feel, well, my wife and I, we never miss a service. Except that one time when there was 5 feet of snow. Well, that's not what this is. It's much more than that. It's taking the time during the week. And by the way, this is why this is important. If you are single and you're thinking of getting married, just remember, this is part of the duty that God expects from you. That you take the time to teach your wife. Not the look of we go to church. And we don't even go once. We go twice. We're the good people. And we send our kids to catechism and go through that, all those things. Well, that's fine. But God expects you to teach her as well. Take the time to talk about the scriptures. Third, God expects you to give yourself over to the authority of others for your wife. And what I mean by this is you are willing to sacrifice many things for your wife. You give yourself over to your boss so you can earn money to take care of your wife. You see, love, as 1 John 3:18 says, we must love not in word or in tongue, but in deed and truth. What he means, don't love in tongue alone, but in deed and in truth also. Fourth, you must provide for your wife. The Bible says you're an infidel if you don't provide for your wife. And remember, a wife's needs are much more than clothes and food and shoes. Women need lots of shoes. But it's much more than that, isn't it? Much more than that. Women have emotional and spiritual needs, and you have to provide for those also. And while most men are good at providing food and finances, especially in our circles, we're drilled with this idea of working hard. I mean, that's what you hear at a typical Dutchman's funeral. I've gone to quite a few already, and you hear that all the time. Oh, he was a good provider, with a good Dutch accent. What did he provide? Money, food, yeah. But what about the other things? Can the wife say, man, I was overwhelmed. He took time to teach me, to spend time with me. He made my job easy to help him. See, this is where the hard work comes. It's the sacrificing of yourself for the good of the other one. And here's the thing. Most women, and if you are a young man, you should be taking notes now. Most women prefer getting attention to their emotional and spiritual needs than for food, clothing, and shoes. And you know what? The reason this is very important for me is you don't have to spend any money on that side. Yeah? Shoes cost. Emotional. Ignore that part. You didn't hear that from me. I hope nobody's recording this and playing this back and my wife hears this. Then I'm in real trouble. But, you know, this is part of what God expects, that you spend the time meeting those other needs as well. You're also to support your wife and help her develop her talents. This takes time. This takes money. And you have to continue to do these things. That's what Ephesians says. The idea is that this is a continuing action. And then you have to love your wife exclusively. And why do I say that? You think, well, we don't commit adultery here. But exclusively is important because it's not always some other woman. There's so many times where people are loving their jobs and their hobbies and many other things more than they love their wives. You know, their boat could be their second wife. And Jesus has one bride, and that's the example that you're called to follow. Now, in addition to the help of a wife, God gave man the tools he needs to fulfill these duties. The instruction that man needed, God gave it to him. Then God gave him power and authority over the animals. let me just glance over the next section just quickly, and then we will stop. But in addition to the responsibility with the wife, in order to fulfill your mission in the world, real men have to raise children well. This is the other part. This means you must also take time to teach your children, not delegate what you have been given to others. Elders help, but they're not the primary instructors of your children. Ephesians chapter 6 says, "And you, fathers, bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Earlier he said, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." When he came to instruction, he says, "And you, fathers, you teach them, you discipline them." And this was important because in the Ephesian church, typical in the Greek churches of that, Greek nations of that time, the mothers took care of the child exclusively until about age 7. And then the children will be turned over to tutors who will take care of them. But look at the command that's given. Look at some of these passages in your notes. Proverbs 1:18, "My son, hear the instruction of your father." Proverbs 4:1, "Hear, my children, the instruction of your father." Proverbs 6:20, "My son, keep your father's command." Proverbs 13:1, "A wise son heeds his father's instruction." Proverbs 23:22, "Listen to your father who begot you." What does that mean? The fathers are teaching them. The fathers are commanded to teach them. But it's also one of the ways you really teach your sons. It's not just instruction, but by example. Think about when your children see you, and the way you treat your wife. Maybe you have to go and ask your wife for forgiveness for something you've done. That's hard. Well, maybe you've never had to do it, but some of us are not as sanctified. And you have to do it, and you have to do it because that's an important way in which you teach your children. It's not just instruction, but by example that you teach your children. Or the way you help around the house. Or do you assume, some men, they come home, they put their feet up and they have their coffee or whatever and they wait to be served. The way you get up and maybe help your wife. If you have a young wife who maybe not as experienced taking care of kids, they'll need help. They'll always need help. And there's nothing wrong, and I tell you with all sincerity, there's nothing wrong in a man doing some laundry sometimes. Ironing. Men know how to wash dishes too, or should know how to wash dishes. There's some things you can do that can be of help. We'll touch on a few more of the details shortly. But these are some of the specific things that God has called on us to do. And you know, even though man has fallen into sin, the duties didn't change. We're still responsible for these same actions. You see, we've been redeemed by Christ. And this is where this is very practical. The reason you are to do this, or the reason you're able to do this, is because you've been redeemed by Christ. You've been given a new heart, a new record, a new life. And you're able then to teach. You're able to serve. You're able to sacrifice yourself. The selfishness must go away in your life. And then you can live your life the way God expects you to do so. And here's the thing. When you get this right, when a man really learns to love and serve and teach his children, teach them by instruction and by example, when a man is able to love his wife like Christ loved the church and sacrifice himself for her, then the church will be strong. Then we'll be able to do the work that God has called us to do. It's only when we get that relationship with Christ right that we'll be able to do these things. Otherwise, the elders will be beating a dead horse. The response will not be there. And that's where you always have to examine your life first. Do you know Jesus? Do you love Jesus? When you do, these things will fall into place. But let's stop there. Realize we're getting a little bit, I start getting a little bit into the second section, so we will not be as long there. But we'll take a break now.